Linoleum Knife,
a podcast of the cinema,
hosted by you,
also me.
Okay, I thought you were going to get more specific than that, but I guess
your
not.
Name is Alonzo Duralde.
That's right.
My name is Dave White.
Also right.
We're film critics.
Yes.
That's it. So, oh, well, you have credits. You are the reviews editor at The Wrap. You are on the YouTube show What the Flick on the Young Turks Network. You are on the Maximum Fun podcast Who Shot Ya? And I write reviews for The Wrap. Also, I'm currently making mushroom risotto.
That's, yes, that's all of the above is true.
But the mushroom risotto is pretty much more like my actual job.
You have spent the day fulfilling.
Yeah. Oh, can we just talk about that for 10 seconds?
Sure.
Okay. If you are a subscriber to our Patreon situation where you get extra content and you get things and you get to watch movies streaming live with us and all that stuff.
You are great.
You are, first of all, you're fantastic. Secondly, in case you are unaware, we've already talked about this on the three extra podcasts that you get if you are at various levels of Patreon. But we want to talk about it here in case this is the first time you're hearing about it. But Patreon has decided to charge you more money for what you get. Rather, sorry, charge you more money than what you thought you were pledging.
Yes.
Meaning, no matter what level you subscribe at, it's going to cost you upwards of an extra dollar.
Well,
to do this,
they're adding extra surcharges, and
yes,
the obviously the higher subscriber you are, the more they're going to tack on to that every month.
Correct. But we did the math and we figured it out that some of you are going to pay as much as an extra buck,
yes,
per month for this thing. Now, we don't know if the big fish out in Patreon land, which perhaps you love us, but you must understand something very true.
We are not.
We are not the big fish. We're the tiny
guppies.
We're the krill.
There we go.
That they eat in the, okay. So anyway, those folks are pushing back against this.
Yes.
And we have no voice in this at all. But so we don't know what's all going to shake out, but we do know that if they go through with this, and it's a real thing, and it starts happening, when was it supposed to start happening? In January?
Maybe January, I'm not sure.
Okay. We're going to fix it so that y'all don't end up having to pay more.
Yeah, well...
We're fixing it on our end if this goes through.
We'll start doing some adjustments to the monthly levels. Although, I mean, those monthly levels have to be a round dollar amount, right?
Do they?
I think
well,
they
then
might.
We might lose a few cents. Who cares?
All right. Well, we'll figure something out.
I don't give a damn.
And obviously, you know, for those of you who don't care and just want to stay at the rate you're paying now, have at it. But we're not gonna. We're gonna do our best to accommodate folks so that you aren't paying any extra to get the stuff you're already getting.
Correct. If that means cutting all the levels a buck, so that extra buck gets eaten up on our end, fine. I don't care. I just like it when people are here. I don't want y'all paying extra money. That's stupid.
It's also 2 weeks until Christmas.
Sure. Guess what?
What?
The man... I'm looking at Box Office Mojo right now.
Uh-huh.
The man who invented Christmas is not tearing up the box office...
It is not.
...moment.
It's not burning down the wickets.
It is sexy, sexy young Charles Dickens. Very much like young Jigsaw, who, was... hot and romantic.
Did you see the new Jigsaw this year?
No. I was gonna, because I had in my head like he's the sexy Jigsaw that F's. And, but that, no. I missed it. I was very busy and also depressed. So I didn't go. But I did see The Man Who Invented Christmas. It stinks.
It does. But here's the thing. The funny thing about it, you know, a holiday movie doesn't necessarily make its money back the first go-round.
Next year it's going to be on 25 Days of Christmas on ABC Family or Freeform or whatever the hell they call themselves now.
Yeah. We've not heard the last of The Man Who Invented Christmas.
What? We? Who's we?
We the world.
Well,
I'm never watching it again, and neither are you, but I'm just saying.
Let me tell you something else that's a fact. I will never hear from The Man Who Invented Christmas again, unless I decide to read that book that it's based on.
You should read
the book. Which, as you have told me, is quite good.
Yeah, the book is fascinating.
So, I had something else that I was going to say, something about Box Office Mojo, but I just don't know. Oh, yes, here's the other thing that I was going to say about just Box Office Mojo. The one wide-release film of the week that neither of us bothered to see is called Just Getting Started.
Yes, a movie that was not only not shown to the press, but didn't even screen on Thursday night.
Like it usually does.
Yeah, usually now, most big movies that open on a Friday will start screening at like 7 or 8 o'clock on a Thursday night. So even in those cases where we didn't get to see it beforehand, like we'll just trudge out on a Thursday night.
Right.
But no, Friday morning.
Nope.
And so I sent someone in New York to review it because then that way that gave me a 3-hour jump on the day.
They have so little faith in this film.
Yeah.
That they didn't even, like, it's as though it doesn't exist.
Pretty much.
It was 10th.
Yes.
This week of the box at the box office. It still made more money than the critically acclaimed 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes, but on how many more screens?
1,000 more screens.
Well, there you go.
Yes. But here's the thing. I'm looking at these numbers. It's actually kind of funny because it cost $22 million to make.
Mm-hmm.
They spent,
and that's what they're saying.
They spent $1 on advertising for it. So that's $22 million plus $1 is what it all cost.
Mm-hmm.
And it made $3 million this weekend. So $3 million worth of people went to see this damn thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't here in Los Angeles.
I'm sure it's...
It was where the tickets cost $7.
Right. I'm sure it's the kind of movie that... You know, they're not necessarily thinking the first weekend is going to be a giant thing because it is a movie that is pitched squarely at the 70-plus market.
Yes.
So it's Morgan Freeman and Tommy Lee Jones in a madcap romp. Yeah. So I'm sure they're counting on it, you know, sticking around.
It'll wind up on television and that's where its intended audience.
Oh, absolutely.
In various nursing homes
exactly.
Across the country will see it. Not that there's anything wrong with nursing home television. I've watched lots of it because I... spent lots of time in my mom's nursing home back in the day. And
thank you, USA Network.
I saw every episode of NCIS. I'm a big fan of Pauly Perrette now. When Bull came on, I knew who he was. I was like, I know that dude. He was on NCIS.
He was
the hot young one.
We talked to a friend this weekend who was recovering from knee surgery and talked about being like doped up to an extent that she couldn't watch anything that had like a plot or anything really to pay attention to. So she is now a new convert to the Hallmark Channel because you can drift in and out of those movies. You can fall asleep in the middle of one of those movies and wake up during another one.
Think it's the same film.
Replace the cookies with ice sculpture and you're good.
Okay, so that's... We're not even talking about Just Getting Started.
Nope.
That ain't happening.
Didn't see it. Never gonna
happen. But we are.
Which is too bad because it's Ron Shelton and he's made some good movies.
We are gonna catch you up on two that have been out for a minute.
Yeah.
And one new one.
Mm-hmm.
I, Tonya.
Yes.
And tell everyone about it.
So I, Tonya is the story behind the story of the infamous kneecapping of Nancy Kerrigan, and was Tonya Harding, her skating rival, involved, and what about Tonya's husband, Jeff Galooly, and Tonya's not very nice mother, and the sort of oddball...
Not very nice mother. That's
monstrous mother.
Okay, thank you.
And the rando cast of characters around them. You know, our friend Sandra Lucco did the first documentary about Tonya Harding way before all this happened.
Yes.
And in fact, I believe it is her documentary that whose footage is featured in the closing credits of I, Tonya to show you what these people really look like.
Oh, really? Do
you think I'm not positive, but I think that's it.
Well, that would be very cool if that were the case.
Yeah. Anyway, so Margot Robbie stars as Tonya Harding, and she is amazing.
I agree.
It's a powerhouse performance and funny, and the movie is very much about unreliable narrators. These people are all sort of purportedly telling their version of the story.
Directly to
the camera.
To you, yes.
And edited in with, like, Bobby Cannavale as a tabloid TV producer sort of telling that version of the story, and we're sort of left to decide for ourselves who, if anyone, is even close to the truth on this. For those of you who sat out the 90s or weren't born yet, Tonya Harding was a figure skater, a very talented figure skater, one of the very few female figure skaters ever who could do the very difficult triple axel, which is that she could spin around 360 degrees three times in the air on one leap.
Yeah.
And then, but she came from a very working class background. You know, she would skate to ZZ Top while the other girls were, you know, performing to Tchaikovsky. And it came down to it was a big showdown at the Olympics between her and Nancy Kerrigan, who was your sort of more typically acceptable, toothy athlete, you know, future spokesperson kind of athlete.
Yeah.
Before Kerrigan's performance at the Olympics, somebody tried to bash her knees in.
And they succeeded.
They, to an extent. I mean, she still skated.
She got injured.
She was injured. And then the more they started investigating this incident, the more it seemed to point to Harding, or maybe her husband, or maybe her husband's odd friends.
Yes.
And so the movie is about this sort of odd little moment of sort of tabloid sports drama that captivated the nation before Tonya Harding herself became something of a public punchline.
Right.
And, you know, it is a movie that is determined to, if not make you sympathize or even empathize with Tonya Harding, at least to take her seriously as a human being.
Right.
I'm curious what you think about the film's treatment of class issues, because I've heard some people try and take it to task for being condescending. Whereas I think you have to kind of explore where she comes from and why she was such an anomaly in the world of figure skating to explain who she is and what she's about.
If you're going to show, you know, working class people who also happen to be dysfunctional, lacking access to higher education, or having simply maybe rejected the idea of education, you are damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because depicting poverty, ignorance, abuse, all of the things that, you know, colored her experience.
Yeah.
It's not cute. It's not charming. And yet, at the same time, often, you know, people are people.
Mm-hmm.
And they sometimes find a very bleak humor in their situation. So I know that there are people who not only think of the film as being condescending on a class level, whereas I see it simply as a depiction of that, that world. And the reason I know that you're asking me is because that's my background.
Right.
Okay. Those are the people I come from.
Mm.
All right. Socioeconomically, education level, all of it. The physical, I didn't have the physical abuse situation happening, but there was, you know, alcoholism and general chaos. But you know, even when you're in that situation, you find things to laugh about the very situation that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And so the film does this, and if I'm going to fault it on any level, and I know this is also a story out there among the people who don't like it, there is a very tricky line to walk when you're turning physical violence into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of that in this film.
In terms of how her marriage is portrayed?
And in terms of how her relationship to her mother is portrayed.
Right.
I mean, it's a comedy abusive mother.
Yeah.
All right. So that's...
Although when you see the footage of the mother at the end, it's kind of like, oh.
Right. No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not fun to watch these people, and it's not fun to think about the fact, the very real fact that a large swath of the United States
mm-hmm.
is this.
Right.
That just is. As I always like to say, your educated, well-spoken, book-reading, charming, concerned, happy family
yes.
that you come from
yes.
is a freak show. You people are weird. There's no getting around that for the first 15 years of knowing you and your family, going to visit them, I had to take a 24-hour dip into like, oh, wait, I'm in this place now. The first 24 hours of any visit to Atlanta where your family is used to be, not really anymore, but used to be a very disorienting experience for me.
Hmm.
Because I see families like yours, everyone sees families like yours and thinks, oh, look at them. It's like they're like the Kennedys or something. You know what I mean? And so my family's normal.
I see. Okay.
My family's normal. My family's like all the other families in the United States. Barely getting by, paycheck to paycheck, yelling at each other. Someone's drunk. Someone's running away from home. A cousin is just got arrested for writing bad checks and is going to prison for a couple of years. This really happened in my family, by the way. And, you know, like, that's a normal family in the United States. And so,
this film's
depiction of those folks.
Right. Is it responsible, I guess, is the question.
It's as responsible as any other depiction of that sort of, you know, situation.
Okay. Because, yeah, I thought it was, for the most part, funny.
Yeah.
But then I was made to feel by certain commentators that that was wrong, that I shouldn't.
It is wrong, and yet at the same time, that's just life.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
I don't think
it's like when I talk about, okay, it's like, remember when I wrote the story about my family selling Amway for a year and
yes.
how every time I would revise that story,
mm-hmm.
and it wound up being published in a real truncated form, and then it was on an NPR show a couple years ago. Another truncated form of that story. But every time I would read that story to you, you'd be like, I can't listen to this story. It bums me out too much. Meanwhile,
everybody else thought it was hilarious.
Everyone else that I read it to or that read it thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Because I was taking that situation.
Right.
And exploring that bleak level of humor that really was going on.
Right. Whereas I can't escape the fact that it's a thing that happened to you.
Correct.
Fair enough.
All right. So, you know, if this film makes you uncomfortable and you don't want to see, you know, a comedic touch to this, you know, ugly, abusive, unhappy home.
Yeah.
Don't go. Don't go see it. But Margot Robbie is stunning.
Yes.
In this film. And
Allison Janney. I don't even.
Allison Janney is so good. I hope she doesn't get nominated for anything because it's too brittle and raw and gross a performance.
Well, she's already up for a Golden Globe.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to look at that list. But,
and Sebastian Stan, I really like in that he is an actor that I never recognized from movie to movie.
Right.
Like at the end of the film, I was like, oh, who is that guy? Sebastian Stan.
It's the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm particularly happy about Margot Robbie's ability to have gotten this accomplished, and now she's gonna get her over.
Yeah.
It's going to get her over the wall of pretty girl.
Yeah, this is her monster, even if she doesn't win an Oscar for it.
Right. And so there are two ways you can go if you're an actor, male or female. You can be a good-looking leading person or a normal-looking character actor. And both of those paths have their complications.
Right.
For...
And if you're a pretty person who wants a character-y part, you have to really go overboard in, like, unprettying yourself.
Right. Men have to do less work.
Yes.
To get there.
They just put on some weight.
And pretty men get to age into older, handsome men.
Right.
But pretty women don't get to age into older, pretty women. They just get tossed aside.
They get shunted off to television, whereas, or they become character actors.
Whereas Ann Dowd and
Margot Martindale,
they get to start young and grow old, and they are always character actresses, and they'll always work.
Right. And even like Meryl Streep and to an extent Glenn Close were never like hotcha sex bombs.
Right.
So yeah, they also get to age.
Well, they came out of the gate being taken seriously.
And that's true. That's true.
That's a very rare thing. Elizabeth Moss is doing that.
Right. That sort of red gravy kind of thing. Yeah. You know?
And so, what you wind up with though, if you're the kind of hot that straight guys just look at you and go, blah, 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 blah.
If you're a Maxim,
if you're
hot,
and that's Margot Robbie, and that's Charlize Theron, and that's those women who have to figure out a way around the outside.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman even had to do that.
Yes, and so I'm not saying oh boohoo poor pretty girls, they have so many problems, but they have a weird set of problems.
They hit a weird wall as actresses if they want to do anything remotely interesting.
Right. So, good for her.
Yes.
This opened on like 4 screens.
Yeah, it'll be expanding more. But like both Margot Robbie and Allison Janney are up for Golden Globes, and I believe the movie is as well. So you know it's going to be getting out there. It's going to be part of the award season conversation. One thing about the movie that even superfan Christy Lemire pointed out as a problem, and I agree, it has some of the most on-the-nose needle-drop song choices.
Well, yeah.
Since another Margot Robbie movie, Suicide Squad.
No, I know.
But, you know, if you can get past those, it's really good.
Okay, so I just saw the latest from Joaquin Trier.
Yes.
Now, I'm a big fan.
Me too.
Of Joaquin Trier. He's a Norwegian director. And he is responsible for the films Reprise.
Mm-hmm.
Louder Than Bombs.
Right.
Oslo, August 31st. And now this.
And I would unhesitatingly recommend all three of his previous films.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to seeing Thelma. I just haven't got
time to see it yet. I will hesitatingly recommend Oslo.
Oh, I like that one too.
It's not about liking. They're all very good films.
Uh-huh.
Oslo's
a tough recommend because it's...
brutally unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's about a person whose struggle for sobriety post-rehab doesn't work.
Yeah.
And the ending is
bleak.
Bleak. And so I have some friends who have been through rehab situations, and when this film, and who are also art house
people, aficionados.
And I said, you might not want this one in your life. It might not make you it might not make you feel confident about yourself.
If you have grappled with suicidal ideations, probably not a movie you should
see. Correct. Yeah, that or any sort of addiction. It's a really hard movie. Now, this one, Thelma, and I'm having a hard time deciding how I'm supposed to pronounce it. Because we, in America, we say Thelma.
Yeah.
Real long th kind of sound.
Thelma and Louise.
And there are other languages where the name is pronounced Thelma.
What do they say in the movie?
Well, something in between that. Sort of like a Thelma. Like a like a real hard T, but also that sort of th. Right. And so, okay. I'm just going to say it like a dumb American, which is what I am, and Thelma.
Which always makes you think of that really funny Arsenio Hall sketch at the beginning of Amazon Women on the Moon, but that's neither here nor there.
So anyway, this stars a young Norwegian actress named Eili Harbo.
Okay.
And she plays a young college student who was raised by very quiet but incredibly strict Christian parents. Mm-hmm. Which makes her sort of an unusual person in her social circle. Because when they offer her a drink at a party, she says, "No, I don't do that." "Well, why don't you do that?" And she says, "Well, I was raised Christian." And they're all fascinated by that. It's not like here in the United States where that sort of hardcore Christianity is commonplace.
Right. More so in some parts of the country than others, but I hear you.
And you know something's terribly wrong when the opening scene of the film, which is a flashback, shows her father taking her out into the woods to go deer hunting. And he points the gun at her. She's six. And he doesn't do it. But you spend the next hour thinking, why did he want to do that?
It's worth noting, this is a horror film, right?
No.
Oh.
It is not a horror film.
Oh, that's how I'd heard it described.
Okay. Well, depends on your definition of horror, I guess.
Okay.
But it is not a horror film.
Gotcha.
It is a strange, unsettling, unnerving film.
Psychological drama?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so. So, she's in college, and things start to happen to her. She begins having seizures. But these seizures are always accompanied by sort of externalized events. Things shake and move. Animals behave strangely. People around her do weird things. And no one can explain what it is. It's not epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
It is an actual very real condition, psychologically based seizures. I looked it up on Wikipedia in the middle of the movie.
You mean a person can actually get seizures that make animals behave strangely?
No. That's the strange component to it. You learn as the film goes on in flashbacks why the parents are freaked out by her at age six.
Hmm.
You learn things about her family. You learn that her relationship to her religion is so repressive. She is so repressed that her burgeoning lesbianism becomes a factor in what's happening to her. There's a blurb on the screener copy from a film critic that says it's like if Ingmar Bergman directed Carrie.
Okay.
And that's kind of accurate.
How does it compare to Raw, which is also about a young woman going to school? No.
I haven't seen Raw, but
I thought you had.
There's no, you know, there's no cannibalism going on.
Well, I don't mean they're identical.
It's not a horror.
Okay.
It's not a horror film.
Gotcha.
It's just a strange film.
Okay.
Now, it's the first Joachim Trier film that deals with events that might be called supernatural.
Okay.
His first three films are directly grounded in an everyday kind of reality that we would recognize anywhere, especially if we lived in Norway. Where,
although Louder Than Bombs is set in the U.S.
Louder Than Bombs is set in the U.S., but the people in Louder Than Bombs behave
like they're Scandinavian.
Like they're Scandinavian. His filmmaking style is quiet.
Spare.
And spare, kind of borderline austere. Emotions never rise up very high. People are fairly calm and controlled. Things are quiet. He finds his tension in silences, and that's very much what happens here as well. I'm talking around this film because I don't want to give away this, okay, the weirdness that happens. Although that weirdness takes on an ambiguous quality, and then it doesn't, and then it does again. And so he's never fully giving you one thing or the other. This is also, I would say, his most, I don't want to use this word as a pejorative, but his most Hollywood kind of movie, because it has so much in common with other genre films that you've seen before.
So his most accessible film,
Maybe. Accessible, but also strangest.
Gotcha. Interesting.
So I like it a lot. Can't say I learned anything about it, but I also, but I do know that its depiction of the anxiety and stress that comes with being raised in a fundamentalist in religion is dead accurate.
Once again, drawing from your own background.
The idea of praying and praying and praying and praying and praying and praying and praying for something to be taken away from you.
Hmm.
For something to just be gone from you. For whatever influence you have on the outside world that might cause harm, please make it go away, God. Please make it go away.
Hmm.
And so that's part of this movie too.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna watch it.
It's worth looking at, and of course because it's his film, and he's so good at making things look gorgeous and cold.
It's a wintry.
Yeah, I dig it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I realized we had not gotten around to talking about Mudbound,
which I still haven't watched.
But
you have, so go on.
Yeah, and it's starting to emerge. Again, in the awards conversation, it won the Robert Altman Award this year from the Spirit Awards, which is the award they give for Best Ensemble. Mary J. Blige was a runner-up for Best Supporting Actress at LA Film Critics, and she is now a nominee for a Golden Globe. This is the new film from Dee Reese, who we like a lot. She made her feature breakthrough with Pariah, and then also directed the Bessie Smith film for HBO starring Queen Latifah. I guess it was Bessie it was called.
Yeah.
And this is a really ambitious film, and I can't in any way fault it for its ambitions. It's sort of like David Lean trying to tackle William Faulkner. It's this story about two families in Mississippi contending with, you know, the elements and the earth, and also with racism and politics and World War II,
right,
that happens in the middle of this movie. Two of the characters go off and fight in the war and come back, and even though one is white and one is black, they have more in common with each other, having been there, than everybody else, and they,
right,
sort of find some measure of solace in each other's company, even though for a black man and a white man to be friends in late 1940s Mississippi is a dicey proposal.
Right.
We see the rise of the Klan, or maybe not the rise of the Klan, but the existence of the Klan.
The casual everyday
existence. Yes, the presence of the Klan.
Yes.
This is, like I said, it's a really ambitious movie. It looks great. It's well acted. I like so much about it, but it's also a frustrating film.
Why?
It is based on a novel that I have not read, and I don't know if this comes from the novel, but there's something like at least five or six characters in this movie who narrate at some point.
In voiceover. Right.
Frequently telling you things you already know. And
that always bothers me.
Yeah, it's really extraneous, and it just gets more and more exasperating as it moves along. And the performances are mostly good, although, like, Garrett Hedlund sometimes nails it and sometimes not so much. My feelings about Carey Mulligan, I think I've made pretty clear on this program.
You have, and you're wrong about her.
Yeah, anyway, she's not, wasn't, did not kill me in this. There are a lot of pieces that are great. And I'm thrilled that Dee Reese is getting to work on this big a canvas. But I don't think it's a complete success. But I do think you should see it.
I'm going to watch it anyway. It's on Netflix.
So yeah, it is on Netflix, so it's at your fingertips, because you most likely subscribe to Netflix. You know, I wish I could see it projected. I didn't get a chance to. I think it probably already came and went for that here.
I think it did. It was here for like a week or two.
It is beautifully shot. I mean,
on a screen.
Yeah, I mean, like the there's a lot of mud in this movie, but it, you know, it looks great.
No, it is still playing in Santa Monica at the Lemley Monica.
Really? Okay. Yep. I would think about maybe seeing it again. But yeah, it is a flawed film, but it is. There are a lot of things about it that are really extraordinary.
And now that Mary J. Blige has been nominated for a Golden Globe, it'll probably stay on a screen somewhere in Los Angeles.
Maybe. Hope so.
Probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's, you know, for this, I was kind of surprised that, like midway through this movie, not only do two characters go to war, but, like, there are battle sequences and, like, you know, liaisons in bombed-out cities and, like. A good chunk of the film is set during the war. I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah. I was already impressed with just all this Mississippi,
right.
And you're going to give me all this too. Like, you know, there's a lot going on here, and I've, you know, we've been fans of Dee Reese since she was just getting started, and so, yeah. You know, I between her and Angela Robinson, it's been very exciting to see like black lesbian filmmakers getting the keys to these sort of big sweeping period pieces this
yes.
year. I just wish I liked this one more, but right. I'm glad it exists.
So Mary J. Blige got a nomination. Let's talk about the ridiculous Golden Globes.
Let's.
Mary J. Blige is nominated for Best Supporting Actress for this movie.
Yes.
Have you seen Downsizing?
I have, and I'm thrilled that Hong Chau got nominated. I think she's great.
I don't know her. Is she new? Did she come from somewhere else?
She's fairly new. I think she might have done... I remember I IMDb'd her when I wrote my review in September when I saw it at the Venice Film Festival. But she's relatively new. But she's great in this movie. I liked her a lot.
Allison Janney.
Uh-huh.
Laurie Metcalf and yep. Lady Bird. Octavia Spencer in The Shape of Water.
I like Octavia Spencer in The Shape of Water, but it's not that substantial a role.
This is the Golden Globes?
It is the, I know.
Where, as you know...
She showed up at the right luncheon.
They like you. You're nice to them. There are, how many of them? 88 of
yeah,
them
it's
or something?
Yeah, fewer than 100.
Something like that. So, you got to charm a room full of folks at a lunch.
Right.
And they're like, we like you.
Well, you know, I think Tiffany Haddish, I know you're hanging out with Barbara and all, but, you know, maybe if you had made a little, made the finger sandwiches better at the junket for Girls Trip, they might have shown you some more love or something. I don't know what it takes with the Golden Globes, but she is sadly missing from that lineup.
Okay, the ladies. I've got my list right here. The list from the New York Times. Best actress in a musical or comedy?
Uh-huh.
Judi Dench for This Mango is Off. Helen Mirren for The Leisure Seeker, which hasn't even opened yet.
No, I think it's about to get its one-week Oscar run. And from all everything I've heard is that she's quite good and the movie is terrible.
Oh, okay, great. Margot Robbie... Saoirse Ronan, Emma Stone.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Both Emma Stone and Steve Carell got nominated for Battle of the Sexes, a movie I kind of forgot existed.
Best Actress in a Drama, Jessica Chastain, Molly's Game, which has not opened yet.
Right.
Sally Hawkins.
Shape of Water.
Frances McDormand.
Three Billboards.
Meryl Streep.
For The Post.
Which also has not opened yet.
Correct.
And Michelle Williams for All the Money in the World, which also has not opened yet.
Which not only has not opened yet, like,
right.
I don't think anybody but the Hollywood Foreign Press has even seen it yet.
Yeah.
Because the first invite that I got is for this Friday.
Yes.
So they got to see that early. They got to see The Greatest Showman early because the first screening I heard about for that was yesterday.
Come to the circus, la 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 la.
Yes, I think that...
I'm P.T. Barnum. I'm not like in real life. I'm really nice. Everyone's my friend. These circus people are my family.
And not exploited.
These animals are happy. Da, 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 da.
Everybody loves a circus.
I haven't seen this movie.
Me neither.
But that's a song in the film.
It's not the one that got the best song nomination, but, you know.
It should have.
Yeah.
Because then I would be performing it at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, they called. They said they're going to get Anne Reinking instead.
Not our listener, Anne Reinking.
No, that's right. I forgot. The other one.
I love that we have a listener named Anne Reinking.
I know. That's pretty great.
Okay, so best supporting actor, Willem Dafoe.
Florida Project.
Armie Hammer.
Call Me By Your Name.
Richard Jenkins.
Shape of Water. Yeah, he was really good.
Christopher Plummer. Step it in.
Boom! Best performance given this month.
Sam Rockwell.
For Three Billboards.
Best actor in a musical or comedy. Steve Carell. Ansel Elgort.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What? Like, I know I liked Baby Driver a lot less than most people, but I defy anybody to tell me that Ansel Elgort gave one of the 5 or 10 or 20 best male performances this year.
His face is so soft.
He's so creamy.
He is creamy. And I think his face is nominated for a Golden Globe.
And I think he cut off all the crusts from the finger sandwiches and delicately mandolined radishes.
He is a crustless finger sandwich.
That's why the Globes responded to
him.
Yes. There's something about him that reminds me of something I love. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I'm voting for him.
James Franco.
Disaster Artist.
Hugh Jackman as the P.T. Barnum. La, la, la. The circus. Daniel Kaluuya.
Kaluuya.
At what point is Get Out a musical or comedy?
Okay, this was a thing a while ago where they announced
that was the category for it.
I think you could make a case for it being a comedy in the sense, in the Ira Levin sense of the word.
I understand, yes.
You know, it is a satire.
Yes, it is.
It's a dark comedy, but, you know.
It is also a horror movie.
It is also a horror movie. But, yeah, I think, I am not mad about comedy.
Okay.
I mean, even Jordan Peele was like, well, actually, it's a documentary. It's more of a comedy than The Martian was.
That's true. Best actor in a drama, Timothy Chalamet.
Call Me By Your Name.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Phantom Thread, which has not opened yet.
Not yet opened. Tom Hanks in The Post.
Yep.
Gary Oldman.
Dr. Sauer.
Quite. Denzel Washington.
Ugh.
Has anyone seen that movie?
The Hollywood Foreign Press has, apparently.
I mean, I know it's been out for like a month, but did anybody go see it?
I don't think so. And the thing is, not only is it not a very good movie, it's not even a very good Denzel Washington performance. And I think somebody said that he actually said somewhere, oh, well, I guess I threw the right luncheons or something. Like, he basically copped to having, like, bought this thing.
Funny.
Because it is such a ticky performance. It feels so... Did we even review it on this show?
You did.
Did I? Okay, I couldn't remember. Yeah. It feels so built from the outside. Like,
right.
I'm going to have this hair and these teeth and these old Walkman headphones and these awful suits. And it just like, ugh. It was just... I didn't buy it.
Best director, Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
Martin McDonagh.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Nolan.
Yep.
Ridley Scott.
Yep.
Steven Spielberg.
So, no Greta Gerwig.
No Jordan Peele.
No and no women. Luca Guadagnino.
White dudes.
Yes. Well, and
Guillermo del Toro.
But all interesting. Right. So, wait. Did Dunkirk get nominated for Best Picture?
I'm fixing to tell you.
Okay.
Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. The Disaster Artist.
Uh-huh.
Get Out.
Mm-hmm.
The Greatest Showman.
La, la, la.
I, Tonya.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Bird.
Okay.
Best Motion Picture Drama, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
The Shape of Water,
mm-hmm.
Call Me By Your Name,
mm-hmm.
The Post,
mm-hmm.
Dunkirk.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they didn't nominate All the Money in the World, but they did nominate Ridley Scott.
They nominated Ridley Scott. for getting the job done.
Exactly.
They nominated Christopher Plummer for being game and ready to go.
Ridley Scott wins for prompt directing.
Yes. That's what's up.
Yeah.
Do you have a DVD recommendation whatever. This week?
I do. We were talking about Margot Robbie and her efforts to be taken seriously as an actress.
Yes.
And I'd say this has been going on for a while. Like, The Wolf of Wall Street gave her the opportunity to be, like, super sexy and give a performance. Yes. And I really liked her in a film that not a lot of people, I think, actually went out to see, called Zephyr Zachariah.
Oh, yeah, I never saw that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. It's a it's based on a popular, maybe YA novel. It's a set in kind of a post-apocalypse in I guess the Appalachians or something. And Chiwetel Ejiofor plays a scientist who winds up there and is nursed back to health by Margot Robbie. And then Chris Pine shows up and complicates matters. And Margot Robbie gives not only, like, nails the sort of American Southern voice that she's doing.
Right.
Also plays one of the most interesting Christian characters I've seen in a mainstream movie, like, ever. Like, you know, she's very devout and her faith kind of, you know, dictates a lot of her actions in the film, but it never plays like she's being condescended to or judged or anything like that. It's a really interesting and subtle performance, and it's the one that made me go, oh, you're for real, Margot Robbie.
Right.
And now with I, Tonya, she is, you know, totes for real.
She, you know what? I also thought she was kind of cool in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Except that movie's jive.
I like that movie, actually, except for the casting of two main Afghani roles with, you know, non-Middle Eastern gentlemen, but, you know...
Guess how many episodes of Neighbors Margot Robbie was on when she was still in Australia?
98.
327.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is a daily show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. Woof. And let's not forget, in The Big Short, she does have that very memorable
moment. She has that really great moment in the Big Short, yeah.
What's yours?
Any Joaquin Trier film before Thelma.
Okay.
Unless the warnings that we gave you about Oslo, August 31st.
I'm going to just do Reprise. How about that?
Reprise, then.
Okay. It's easier to link to.
It is.
By the way, quick reminder, folks. If you are shopping on Amazon, do us a favor, won't you? Go to our Facebook page. Click on any of our Amazon links, any of these DVDs. You don't have to buy the DVD. But if that's how you got into Amazon...
To buy all of your Christmas
gifts. To buy all of your Christmas gifts, we'll get a kickback.
That's right.
From your ultimate purchase.
With which we purchase Metamucil.
Mm-hmm.
Also your B-Complex.
That's right.
And your... also...
My flaxseed oil.
Flaxseed oil. That's...
We're living high on the hog here,
you're keeping
people.
Alonzo Duralde in supplements.
Yes. Keeping me moist and regular. It's very important.
Don't say moist. Don't say that word. It's weird. It's a weird word.
Sorry.
Yeah. Got some letters.
Yes.
Jesse says, I saw the Florida Project last weekend. After hearing your robust discussion about it, the way you dug in reminded me of another Chewy movie you both rooted around in and over, Jeff Nichols' Midnight Special.
Hmm.
So I went with an open mind. As the Florida Project cut to black, the audience I was with largely seemed either disappointed, frustrated, or way not into the ending. Up to you as to whether you want to spoil it in discussing further, but I'm interested in your thoughts about allegorical endings, like that one, in an otherwise naturalistic narrative. For my part, I thought about it off and on for days afterward and found myself admiring it as a way to exit the story. Probably understatement, but I thought it was such a pointed and cage-rattling way to tell an audience that putting a hopeful button on stories like this one is not realistic, no matter how much you want it and no matter how much your heart hurts, for that little turd of a girl. That little turd of a girl. She was a little turd, that child.
Well, you know, she look at her mother.
And that is, there's a reason.
Yes.
And that is why the film is so great, because yes. it does not pull punches on what happens to you
when you're raised like
when
that.
When you are raised in, I used this word once already, chaos.
Yeah.
And so, I too, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, other than you did, you said it in a very
vague,
in a very vague but also very real way, Jesse. It is an allegorical ending to an otherwise naturalistic film, and it is a great way of getting out of the story.
Yeah,
because do you want it to end?
Because we know the ending they're not showing us. Yes. We know it in our hearts and in our heads.
Yes,
and so we don't have to see it. We right. know. And we can, and so this other ending allows us a different way to think about that.
Maurice Pialat's L'Enfance Nue, mm-hmm. late 60s, very naturalistic film that influenced the Dardenne brothers. English translation, Naked Childhood, is about a kid about that age, a little older maybe, but whose life is going down a rocky path. And the ending is blunt. And it ends with the child promising to be good. But you know that's not what's coming for that kid. You just know. And it's a tough movie. And I think about that movie when I think about The Florida Project.
I'm going to reach even further back.
Yes.
In the 1920s silent classic The Last Laugh,
okay,
director Fritz Lang tells this tragic story of a man who was the greatly respected as the doorman of a fancy hotel in Berlin. But when he becomes too old to carry the luggage, he is demoted to a men's room attendant and is so broken by this demotion that he steals a uniform and still tries to fake it when he goes home so the neighbors will continue to be impressed by him. And the film ends on a really dour note, and then suddenly it tacks on this insanely happy ending in which he wins the lottery.
Oh, weird.
and like, you know, is living the high life and everything's great, and it's so dizzyingly out of pace with what the rest of the film was like.
Yes.
That it's clearly like a fantasy or a filmmaker trying to let the audience off the hook, or, you know, however you want to take it. But it, right. you know, it accomplishes the same thing.
Yeah. Daniel says, I loved Lady Bird. Well, Daniel, you're right.
That's correct.
It's one of the most authentic movies I've seen about lower middle class teenagers. Also, the stuff with the kids in the play reminded me so much of my own high school years. I put all of Greta Gerwig's films on my Netflix queue. It's late in coming, but I am a fan.
She's extraordinary.
Yeah, watching Lady Bird really was like, for me, in terms of that authentic situation, you know, the thing where your parents are always telling you, I can't afford this. I'm sorry, that's not what we can afford. Oh, you're upset? Tough. We can't afford it. Sorry, kid. That's a life lesson for you. We can't afford it. And that happens nonstop throughout Lady Bird. So, yeah, it's right on the money. Brennan. This letter comes from November. I've been listening for a couple months now. I love the show. I haven't thought to write in, because I figured there wasn't anything I could ask you that hadn't been asked in the past 7 years. I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty.
Yeah.
I still don't know if that's true, but I'm getting to the point that every time your show appears on my feed, it's like Christmas morning.
Oh.
So I thought I'd drop you a line. I just caught up with that ever controversial A Bad Mom's Christmas. Maybe I'm just as easy for Christmas movies as Alonzo, but I had a good time. The plot is exhausting, boilerplate, but I laughed out loud at several jokes. See Christine Baranski. Well, yeah. She's the funny thing in the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the first movie even had jokes, so it was an improvement. I also thought Justin Hartley was hilarious, and therein lies my question. Whenever I celebrate the comic performance of someone with abs, my boyfriend says I'm just giving them a pass for being hot. And while it's true that I've seen an unhealthy amount of Zac Efron movies, I never claimed he was a genius. I actually think I react the other way around. I kind of want hot people to fail at being funny, because that's just unfair to the rest of us. But I can still appreciate it when they are, because the world needs more joy in it, and if that's packaged with some eye candy, I'm not complaining. I was just wondering where both of you stood on the issue. Do we come in with a bias in either direction when someone attractive is attempting to be funny? Is there some part of my lizard brain that is compelling me to laugh? Or do I just have a bit of boyfriend jealousy on my hands? I can't wait to hear the next episode. Cheers. Brennan.
I kind of feel you on the, like, it feeling unfair. Because I always think of comedy as being the realm of people who had a crappy time in high school.
Yeah.
You know, which right. is not to say that there aren't attractive people who also had a crappy time in high school and just yes. blossomed later or whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, usually... my first instinct is like, oh, you're going to tell a joke now, too? That's adorable. But if they are...
if they win you over, they win you
but
over.
But exactly. If you find them funny, then and they've cleared that hurdle, then that means...
Zac Efron knows what he is and what he can do now.
Exactly.
You know?
He's in on the joke. I mean, the classic in on the joke at the moment is Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
You know, his physique is part of the gag now because it's yes. so incredibly...
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you're meant to laugh at him and also say,
want it.
Want to touch it. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, he knows he's doing the same thing that Zac Efron's doing.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Only like exponentially more.
Yes.
In some weird way.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think that Justin Hartley.
Like, remember.
Is funny in Bad Moms Christmas.
Remember when they were saying how funny Jenny McCarthy was?
Oh yeah, because she
when
like
they were trying to sell her.
She crosses her eyes and makes fart noises. You know?
Remember they were remember back when there was a concerted media campaign
oh.
to sell you on the comedy goal
or Brooke Shields for that matter.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you kept thinking, I guess you're mildly amusing. Like I don't know.
Yeah, I never quite bought into the whole what's her face from Will and Grace is the new Lucille Ball.
Deborah Messing.
She's good at things and she can be funny, but you know, like
The Rock, I'm hit and miss on with comedy. Like he can do it.
Oh God, you just reminded me of something that I need to put on my worst list that I didn't have on before.
He can do it, but sometimes he trips over himself trying to do it. Mm. I'm also thinking of like Tyrese. In Fast and Furious movies.
I never find him funny.
Where he's supposed to be comic relief, and you're like,
Ludacris is the funny one, exactly.
But you're kind of... your dickishness comes through no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
And he's pretty. Tyrese is really pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a model.
Right.
There was a reason for that. And so, it's hard sometimes when someone who is really attractive... is standing in front of you saying, laugh, I'm
wacky.
I'm being comedy now. that's, you know, yeah. Case by case basis.
Yes, absolutely. But you are at least conscious of your feelings about this. So I think that means that whatever your ultimate opinion is, you know, is made purely.
Tom Hardy was not funny in that Reese Witherspoon movie.
Oh, God. This means war.
Yeah.
You're right.
And, you know.
And he's ultra dreamy.
He's my next husband. So, but do we think of Tom Hardy as beautiful? Do we think he was sort of like...
craggly, handsome.
Punched in the face hot? Is that what
he is?
Well,
he's such a chameleon,
yeah.
You know? And he can, you know, like somebody was saying they didn't like him because he was...
because punched in the face hot is my definition of hot. Yeah.
Somebody was saying that he always seemed too sort of grimy and scary. And I'm like, but what about Inception, where he's like practically a toff, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
He was kind of funny in Inception.
He was.
Yeah.
Darling.
Exactly. Hey, we got a bunch of 5-star iTunes reviews.
Yay. Give me some highlights.
Moomger says, even though Alonso just said he doesn't like Joe Wright's movies, I have to give this podcast 5 stars.
Huh. Well, hooray.
Came for the quality reviews, stayed for the food talk and bickering.
Whatever keeps you tuning in.
Winona says, we are a pleasure to listen to.
Oh.
She also, I assume Winona is a female person because it sounds like Winona.
Yeah.
Look forward to their thoughts on things, whether it's movies or any tangents that they decide to go on.
Tangents? Us?
Diddy T says, I have missed Alonzo since the days of current TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Juliet.
The death of current TV is part of why this show exists in the first place.
No, I remember that day. Current TV went kaput, and you came home and you said, everything's garbage. I need you to finally listen to me and be on a podcast with me. After which, and that day, that statement came after 2 solid years of you, roughly every month, saying, I want to do a movie podcast with you. And me saying, no. And you saying, I want to do a movie podcast with you the next month. Like, pretty much on the same date. And me saying, no.
I want Easter egg. I want Easter egg.
Yeah. You just kept saying, do a movie podcast with me. And I kept saying, no.
And look at us now.
Yes. Ugh, no. Juliet says she appreciates the insights these guys have on films.
Ah,
their recommendations are perfect for my taste.
Ooh, well, then your taste is perfect. Juliet.
She likes Alhazard Baltasar as much as I do. Music Man, 1967, says, my first and fave in the world of podcasts.
Oh, wow.
Alonzo and Dave are a married gay couple that are film reviewers and commentators. The reviews are well considered and offered up as conversation rather than simply a reading. Like with all reviewers, I disagree as often as I agree with either of them, but what I love are the conversations, which frequently digress.
What a kind way to put it.
I love nothing more than listening to their podcasts on Sunday morning. Well, it's Monday night.
But usually we're more on the
ball.
Sorry,
Music Man. Well, no, it's December, and we've already explained this to everybody. Yes. It's like life is...
It's crazy.
Life is moving very quickly in the month of December, for us at least. Yeah. So weekends are sort of packed with stuff. Cat82 says, I like Dave and Alonzo so much, I'm a Patreon subscriber.
Yay! Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
CL Zenzo from USA. Oh, no, CL Zenzo. They're all from USA or from other. Are they all from USA? Yeah, no. Moomger's from Germany.
Well, all right.
Thank you, Moomger from Germany. I didn't realize what country you were from. That's cool. You might be our first German person.
Dankeschön, darling, Dankeschön.
CL Zenzo, Dave and Alonzo, no magic. They know the world of pure imagination. They know the ooey-gooey Christmas feels. They know the laughs that make your cheeks soar. They know the elegant costume and set detail that catches your eye. They love film. As much as you, they talk about it a lot. They warn you of movies that don't quite do it for them. Many poor movies will be criticized on this show. But there are also a ton of lovely food-related tangents. Whimsical banter that makes Linoleum Knife show that podcasting is entertainment in its own right. Bravo. Thank you.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. All right. I got to go make dinner.
Okay.
So let me out of here.
So thank you all for listening. Hey, join our Patreon, won't you? Patreon.com/linoleumknife. I know they're being weird.
Maybe you should wait.
No, they're being weird at the moment, but we're going to work it out one way or another. So don't let that stop you from joining.
And we fixed it so that we have a cap on the number of people who subscribe at $20.
Yes. So
it was our compromise.
Because Dave was scaring you off, and I don't want to...
I was getting overwhelmed by the
so
Patreon.
If you
want to
be a $20 Patreon, act fast because there's now a ceiling.
There's a ceiling. There's like 5 spots left.
Yeah. Yep. So we can still accommodate you.
Yeah.
Hey, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com and check out Bibbs and Whitney's two podcasts, Canceled Too Soon, as well as critically acclaimed over at the Schmoes Know Network. And, you know, listen to the Schmoes Know show, of course. And Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. And Fat Guys of the Movies, which I was recently on, talking about Christmas films. And the Criterion Cast. And
you did what? You talked about Christmas
films? I know, surprisingly. Podcast,
Which one of the 12?
I will be on the next episode of All Things Cozy talking about Christmas movies, which I'm very excited about because I really, really love that show. Also, check out Comics Canon, did I say? The Sewers of Paris, Film Spotting SVU, The Game Night Guys. No, The Game Night Guys is gone.
Game Night Guys is over.
I have a muscle memory for that in my tongue, but they're not even a thing anymore. Secretly Timid. Oh, my other show, Who Shot Ya? At MaximumFun.org. In our latest episode, our special guest is Elliot Kalin from The Flophouse, which was very exciting for me. You may also know Elliot as the former head writer for The Daily Show and the current head writer for Mystery Science Theater 3000, so he knows his stuff. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. Apparently, that's not iTunes anymore. It's Apple Podcasts.
Does iTunes not exist anymore?
For podcasts, no. Apparently, iTunes is music and stuff, but Apple Podcasts is where the podcasts are.
Great.
And leave us a 5-star review, like all the lovely people whose stuff that we read today.
Yes.
That would be really great.
I don't want no 4 stars.
It does help.
I'm not going to read your 4-star.
It helps people find this dang show among the morass of all the podcasts that are out there. You can also leave us positive feedback if you stream the show in any place that streams us, like Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com or CastBox or Podbean or iVooks or Google Play or whatever the heck else. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. And a reminder, of course, that the great Blue, BLEU, did our theme music. He's at Bluetopia.com. Are you adding something, or are you just ready to get
out of this? I'm just ready to do the thing that I do at the very end.
I hope everyone's having a wonderful holiday season. We'll be back with more next week. Until then,
goodbye.